Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. Step back in time. Hi, friends. Welcome to Advanced Studio Classroom. Today is April the 10th. I'm Rebecca. Today, we will continue to travel to different places in the U.S., and many of these places, they have historical significance, and many of them are living museums. Well, Peter, welcome to the program.
Hi, Rebecca. Hello, everyone. Thanks for being here.
Peter, we talked about the concept of living museums yesterday. And living museums, we had examples like Williamsburg in Virginia. So we went to places like that, and living museums are basically usually these towns or villages where you can feel like you are living in that time period from the past. And Peter, I'd like to ask you, have you gone to these living museums or places where there's a lot of history, where you feel like you went back in time to the past?
I have been to Amish country in Pennsylvania that we talked about at the end of the broadcast yesterday. I went there on a school trip a long time ago. And like I said yesterday, I'm afraid I was just too young to really appreciate it. It seemed really kind of boring, actually. But again, you know, that's the thing about the Amish, is that they reject most modern technology and conveniences and luxuries like that. So if you're a little too connected to those conveniences and technology, you might, Amish country may be a hard go for you at first, but fascinating from a historical perspective. In terms of our locations today, yeah, I have been to Harper's Ferry, which we'll read about in West Virginia. I was a little older then, so I appreciated it a little more. And I've been to some areas in the Old West of the United States. We'll go to one of those places today, Tombstone, Arizona. I haven't been to Tombstone myself, but I've been to towns like that, but not really an actual living museum, as you say, where everybody is dressed up that way. I haven't really had that experience. No, I've come close. Like I say, the Amish, but they're not doing it to reenact history. Right. They're just living their lives.
They're living their lives.
And that's how they go about it.
That's how they roll. Yeah. Well, when I used to live in Vancouver, there is a place that sometimes we go to on the weekend called Fort Langley. And that is the birthplace of the province of British Columbia. That is the province that Vancouver is located in. And that place, Fort Langley, was founded in 1827. It used to be a fur trading post because back in that time, fur trading was an important source of revenue and income. Well, Fort Langley is not, strictly speaking, like you said, a living museum. You don't see a lot of actors dressed up in, you know, colonial garb and just walking around town like that. But they do have a lot of old buildings and a lot of shops and restaurants and cafes that make you feel like you went back in time. Mm. So it's just a really nice place to spend a Saturday afternoon. And a lot of times you will also see TV crew. They're filming television series like of that time period. Mm. So that place, that's in a suburb of Vancouver, is called Fort Langley. So friends, if any of you are traveling to Vancouver and you would like to get a little bit sense of history from the past without being too boring, Fort Langley might be one of those places that you can consider.
Nice.
Yeah, just a nice place to spend an afternoon. But friends, we have many more places we need to go. So let's get into our first reading for today, where we will fly to Arizona to a place called Tombstone.
Tombstone, Arizona. Rugged, mountainous Tombstone became a hotbed for miners in 1887. And while there wasn't gold in them there hills, there was silver, and plenty of it. Tombstone quickly attracted miners, but also gamblers, outlaws, and other ne'er-do-wells. Rooted in Wild West infamy, Tombstone was the site of the gunfight at the OK Corral in 1881. The town reenacts shootouts, entertains guests in its historic saloons, and boasts its infamous Boot Hill graveyard, the final resting place of many outlaws. Don't miss a visit to the original Birdcage Theater, a former meeting place for gamblers, prostitutes, and outlaws. And to prove just how authentic this Wild West town is, watch for tumbleweeds blowing through the unpaved dirt roads, just like in the old westerns.
Peter, we're going to the Wild West. Now, I made a mistake. I said we were going to fly there, but I don't think there's an airport in Tombstone, Arizona. There's definitely an airport in Phoenix.
Yes.
But there's no airport in Tombstone. But we're going to drive there. So let's talk about Tombstone.
Well, we really ought to saddle up our horse and giddy up, you know. And
that's true. As long as you can make it to Tombstone without getting thrown off your horse. Now, what is Tombstone like? It was founded around 1887.
Right, yeah. And it was founded because silver was discovered nearby. Originally, there was the quest for gold because there was a big gold rush in this in the 1880s in the western and northwestern United States, and I believe Canada as well.
Yes.
At that time. But they didn't find any in Tombstone, Arizona. What they did find was silver, lots of silver. And so the town was set up and it became a hotbed for miners, miners of silver. And a hotbed, a good expression, means a large and popular concentration of something or of a certain kind of person, in this case, miners. After the 2025 World Series, we might say that Japan is the new hotbed of wonderful baseball players because the Los Angeles Dodgers got so far on the help of their great baseball players, the pitcher Yamamoto and, of course, Shohei Ohtani. In other words, they're rugged, rugged mountainous tombstones. Something is rugged. It means it's rough. It's not smooth. It's physically challenging, rugged, mountainous tombstone.
Yes. And then this town not only attracted miners, it also attracted, usually anytime you have these kind of hotbed towns, like towns that suddenly become very popular, we have gamblers, right? Because like they're gambling, they're high risk, like they're willing to tolerate high risk.
Right.
So we have gamblers, we have outlaws. Now, outlaws, this is a very old word. Outlaw is usually someone who broke the law. And now they're on the run because they don't want to get punished.
Right.
So there's these people are out of the bounds of the law we call outlaws. And then also interesting phrase, I never heard it until today. What is this?
Oh, yes, I love this
word. Ne'er-do-wells.
Gamblers, outlaws, and other ne'er-do-wells.
Yes.
And the way the author introduces it, you can tell that a kind of ne'er-do-well is an outlaw. A kind of ne'er-do-well is a gambler because he says gamblers, outlaws, and other ne'er-do-wells. Ne'er-do-well, it's a deliberately sort of old expression. The apostrophe stands for the V in never. So the real expression is never-do-wells. And this is an abbreviation of it. And it means someone who can never seem, not necessarily a criminal, but someone who might become a criminal because they just can't seem to find their footing in life or they don't want to find their footing in life. It's kind of a shifty person, kind of doesn't seem to have any focus in their life, doesn't seem to really do anything successfully. Again, might be a criminal, might not, but it's not something you want to be called. It's not something to put on a resume that you're a ne'er-do-well. It's just sort of this kind of old-fashioned, semi-romantic term about someone who just sort of lives by their wits and fails more often than they succeed.
Yes. Another word would be good for nothing.
Yes.
People who are good for nothing. They can't succeed in anything. But, Tombstone has a lot of history. And we talked about the Wild West. The Wild West, the whole concept of the Wild West was all these people rushing to the West because of gold or silver. Like they're trying to make a fast buck.
Right.
They're trying to make quick money. So a lot of people moved out west in the 1800s, starting with the 1849 gold rush in California. And then also there's more gold rushes. And then we have here a silver rush, people moving out to the Wild West. And because at the time, the Wild West, there wasn't a lot of law and order.
Right.
So basically, you're out on your own. And then so we have like things we see in the next paragraph. So here it says rooted in Wild West infamy. Infamy is usually kind of more a negative word, right?
Right.
It's about the evil stuff. You're famous for being evil.
Right. You don't want to be infamous. You want to be famous. It's interesting, though, because we tend to use famous either for good or for bad. The term itself, the way we use it today, is usually for someone who is famous for something good or famous for something bad. Infamy is fame just for something bad, but it's almost become unnecessary these days. Famous has come to mean both, to potentially mean both good or bad.
Yes.
Just well known.
And because there wasn't so much law and order, we have things like the gunfight at the OK Corral. Well, first, let's talk about corral. So basically, a corral is like a fenced-in area for keeping horses or cattle, right? So if you ever go to a rodeo or you go to one of those shows, like that fenced-in area where they put the horses or where they put the cows, that is the corral. So gunfight at the OK Corral, this was a very, very famous shootout in 1881, and it involved basically 9 people, 5 outlaws, and 4 people, 4 representatives of the law.
Right.
So they had this crazy gunfight for like 30 seconds. And in these 30 seconds, basically, like I think like 3 people were killed, like 3 were wounded, 2 or 3 just ran away or whatever. But it was a very, very famous gunfight because they fired so many rounds. And of course, it's like this battle between good and evil. So this made Tombstone very, very famous. So now if you go to Tombstone, what can you see?
Well, you can see the gunfight at the OK Corral reenacted by reenactors who will reenact the shootouts, also entertain guests in the town's historic saloons. And boy, if there's one word that says the Old West, it's saloon. It's just a word for a bar, basically, and it might also have a performing space in it, like a lot of bars do. So sort of a combination of bar and nightclub, but it is a word that just definitely stuck in the 19th century. No one today says, hey, let's go down to the street to the saloon, unless they're deliberately referencing the Old West. A saloon is something that you only find in the Old West or in Old West movies. And it also has a further infamous Boot Hill Graveyard, the final resting place of many outlaws.
So anytime we see the word resting place, we often, that's graveyard.
Right.
A graveyard or a cemetery. Another nice term for it is resting place. And here it tells us basically, well, we will experience all of this. And then there's a really fun word I like, tumbleweed. Have you ever seen tumbleweed, Peter?
Yeah. No, I visited family vacation. We visited a couple Old West towns. Nothing as elaborate as Tombstone. We didn't go anywhere where they reenact gunfights and such. But we did go to a couple towns out there in Arizona, Utah, New Mexico. And you do see those tumbleweeds just sort of blowing by. I mean, you hardly pay any attention to them. It's just the way they've been used by Hollywood film directors when they make westerns to kind of establish the place where you're at, where you just see these sort of clumps of grass blowing by.
Yes,
and those
like
are tumbleweed
is basically like a huge ball of, it's a kind of weed.
Right, exactly.
And it grows very well. And it's actually very interesting. You could look this up online. Tumbleweed is actually not originally from America. It actually came from Russia.
Imagine that.
Yes, it came from Russia. And tumbleweed actually, when it is introduced into environment, the scary thing is it really takes over that environment.
Mm.
So tumbleweed, as these huge balls of weed are like going around, being blown around, it's spreading its seeds.
Wow.
So tumbleweed is actually not a good weed. It can actually take over a lot of places. So yeah, be on the lookout for tumbleweed. And if you don't know what tumbleweed is, look it up. And like Peter said, it's often in Western movies, like Kevin Costner movies, you will see tumbleweed. It's always in the setting to show you where you are.
Right.
So that is the rugged town of Tombstone. Well, let's continue going. We're going to make a huge jump. We are going over to Hawaii. Let's get into our next reading.
Hanapepe, Hawaii. The sleepy town that inspired Lilo and Stitch is located on the island of Kauai and dotted with historic buildings, art galleries, and laid-back old-school Hawaiian vibe. There's no better place for a more authentic, artistic, and nostalgic Hawaiian experience. The iconic Hanapepe Swinging Bridge, constructed in the early 1900s, was rebuilt after Hurricane Iniki in 1992 and still maintains its old-fashioned feel. You'll also find local-owned cafes, and on Fridays, Art Night lights up the town with live music and hula, food trucks and artisan crafts, and handmade goods. This is old Hawaii at its very best.
So, Peter, now we fly to Hawaii. And then, have you seen the movie Lilo and Stitch?
I'm afraid I have not. I haven't seen either of them.
I have not seen this movie either, but it sounds like a very fun and laid-back place. So right in the beginning, it says the sleepy town. So when you say a town is sleepy, it's probably very, very slow.
Slow, quiet. Yeah, this isn't New York.
This is not. This is the opposite of New York. It's on the island of Kauai, and I think Kauai is one of the bigger islands in Hawaii. And it's dotted with historic buildings, art galleries, and laid-back, old-school Hawaiian vibe. So this is a great place for a very artsy Hawaiian experience.
Yeah, or to, you know, after you've seen the gunfight at the OK Corral, this is where you want to go relax and, you know, just sort of slow down a bit. And yeah, nice word there, dotted, that the island is dotted with historic buildings, art galleries, and old school Hawaiian vibe. It just means that they're kind of sprinkled around. These things are sprinkled around the area like dots on a painting or of some kind. You don't always just have, you know, all the dots over in one area. It means they're kind of sprinkled around.
Yeah. And then the next paragraph, we have another word, iconic. It talks about the iconic Hanapepe Swinging Bridge. So something that is iconic is something that everyone knows. It's an icon. It's extremely famous. So this swing bridge apparently is quite famous. And it was rebuilt again after a hurricane. Hurricane is basically like a typhoon, right? Mm. Except the difference is where the origin of the storm.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you're in the West Pacific, we call it typhoon. And I think in the East Pacific, that is hurricane.
I believe so, yeah. Or the Atlantic.
Or the Atlantic.
Is also hurricane.
Yeah, but it's basically a typhoon.
Yeah.
And then you will also find local orange cafes. And then they have something interesting. Friday night seems like a good time to go there.
Yes, because on Fridays, you have what's called Art Night. It lights up the town with live music and hula. Hula dancing, a traditional Hawaiian dance with movements of the hips and hands performed while wearing grass skirts. So talk about iconic, when you think of Hawaii, I think probably most of us may think of hula dancers doing that distinctive dance. As soon as you see it in an ad or in a movie, you know that you're meant to think, we're in Hawaii.
Yes, and beside hula, there's food trucks. There's artisan crafts and handmade goods. This sounds like a fun place to go if you need to go somewhere very slow.
Yes.
Yes, very slow from your fast-paced life.
Right, but with enough sort of an artistic vibe so that it's not boring. It's just slow, but that there's still some things to discover there and some liveliness.
Yes. And on that note, we are moving into our last reading for today. We will travel now to West Virginia to Harper's Ferry.
Harper's Ferry, West Virginia. The site of John Brown's raid in 1859, a pivotal event in the fight against slavery, Harper's Ferry is a small hamlet located at the confluence of the Potomac and Shenandoah Rivers. The town is filled with Civil War and abolitionist history, and 19th century architecture can be seen everywhere in its old brick buildings, quaint shops, and cafes. The stunning Appalachian Trail passes right through the center of town, and local artisan shops selling crafts, pottery, and Appalachian goods dot the landscape. It's a place where nature and history seamlessly coexist.
Peter, Peter, you have been to Harper's Ferry, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Harper's Ferry is actually very famous because of the first line in this paragraph, the site of John Brown's raid in 1859. Well, let's talk about John Brown just for one second. So John Brown, he was an abolitionist. And abolitionist is a huge word, but abolitionist just means someone who worked or supported the ending of slavery. So this is like back in the 1800s, there were people who really wanted to end slavery in the U.S. So they are called the abolitionists. Now, there is one abolitionist. His name was John Brown. So he had about 20-something followers. So John Brown took his 20 followers, and they stormed the federal armory. So armory is basically where the government kept its weapons. So they stormed the federal armory back in 1859. And what he was hoping to do was he was hoping that the slaves would revolt or they would take up arms against the slave owners and this would start a revolution. But that did not happen. This raid was very soon put out. But this raid was important in the history leading up to the Civil War between the North and the South. So this is why Harper's Ferry is famous, because of this John Brown's raid. Now, let's talk a little bit more about Harper's Ferry. What is it?
Right. Well, it's a small hamlet located at the confluence of the Potomac and Shenandoah Rivers. Confluence, you might be able to guess from context there, is just where two rivers meet, two or more rivers meet and flow together. In this case, the Potomac River and the Shenandoah Rivers. They meet at their confluence. Now, hamlet might be, hopefully, is more familiar to you as the name of a tragedy by the great English playwright William Shakespeare about a prince in Denmark, but the word actually also means simply a small town. So when you see hamlet with a lowercase h, then it's probably referring to the small town, and with a capital H, then it's referring to the Shakespeare play.
Yes, and we talked about how important this town is because of this abolitionist raid. But there's a lot of abolitionists in Civil War history. And the Civil War here, of course, is talking about the war between the North and the South, the U.S. Civil War from 1861 to 1865. So it's filled with things from that part of history. And there's a lot of architecture as well. There's a lot of 19th century architecture. And it's also a very beautiful town. So we have something passed through the center of town.
Yes, the Appalachian Trail, the stunning, as it's described here, Appalachian Trail. The Appalachians are mountains, prominent mountain range in the northern, northeastern United States, much smaller than the Rockies, but the most prominent mountain range really in the mid-Atlantic, eastern United States, that part of the country. And there's a trail that goes right through the Appalachians, a path, and it goes through the center of the town of Harper's Ferry. And as a result, in the small, the little stores in the town of Harper's Ferry, you can find Appalachian goods, crafts and pottery. Appalachian culture is kind of a distinct culture in the United States. It's mountain people who live in the Appalachian Mountains. They tend to be lower income, but they have an artistic sensibility that is distinctive, and so-called bluegrass music, which is that kind of American music that features fiddles and banjos, is more or less originated in the Appalachian areas. So if you're interested in Appalachian culture at all, in addition to the American Civil War, Harper's Ferry would be good for that as well.
Yeah, and here in the last sentence, we have a very good word. We have seamlessly. So when we talk about A seam is like when you're, for example, you're sewing two pieces of cloth together. The seam is where you sew the two pieces together. You can see a seam. So if something is seamless, then that means it's so perfectly put together, you cannot see any line or you can't see any seam between the two things. So something that is seamless, it's just so, it's done so smoothly that you can't tell where something stops and something begins.
Right.
So this is some place where nature and history seamlessly coexist. So basically, it's all put together in such a nice way. You can't you can't really separate the two.
Right, yeah.
They're basically just seamlessly put together.
Right, right. Yeah, the nature obviously was there first, and then the human town that grew up around after it, but they coexist in a way that is, that the author says, is seamless. And so it's a good place to go if you want to be in nature and sort of get an Appalachian Trail kind of vibe, or if you want to explore history with the John Brown Raid.
That's right. Well, that brings us to the end of today's program, but we have a couple more spots we'd love to hit in this journey of going back in time. So friends, we hope that you'll come back tomorrow and join us on day 3 of journeying into the past. I'm Rebecca.
I'm Peter.
Saying goodbye.
Bye-bye.